It's my great pleasure to introduce to you Tom Brustowski, President of NSERC, Natural Sciences Engineering Research Council of Canada. Tom has been a promoter of science, a real driving force behind science and scientific research. I know his efforts on our behalf as researchers and individuals interested in science are very much appreciated. And I really look forward today to Tom's comments and the presentation on the innovation agenda and sustainable development. Now, as I mentioned, Tom is the president of NSERC, is a BASC in engineering physics and a PhD in aeronautical engineering from Princeton. He's done all the different interesting jobs, department chair, a vice president academic, a deputy minister, and finally as president of NSERC, appointed initially in 1995. So with that brief introduction, I'll let Tom take the floor and present to us on the innovation agenda and sustainable development. Please join me in welcoming Tom Brustowski.
Thank you, Vic. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm absolutely thrilled to see so many people at the meeting of SFM. You know, I was lucky. I had an hour today between my arrival and a meeting that I had with the deans, and I was able to go through the back of the room and read the posters. And I was absolutely astounded at the breadth of activity that was reported there. One number caught my eye, just an indication of the size of this country and our challenges. One of the first posters I read had to do with research into the black spruce in northwestern Quebec. And the area that was being covered was something like 49,000 square kilometers. I looked at that and I said, my God, that's 7,000 square kilometers larger than Switzerland. You know, the scale of this country is amazing, and the scale of our forests is amazing. And the fact that this network, Sustainable Forest Management Network, looks at issues that involve environmental, economic, technological, and social, brings them all together, tells me that this is an effort that's very, very important for a lot of people in this country. So I congratulate you on the size of the meeting, the amount of interest. I'd like to congratulate Bruce and his colleagues, his staff, for pulling this off. Organizing something like this is no mean feat, and you've done very, very well. Now, we've got some logistical challenges here. I'm looking at you. I need to be looking at the screen. I've got a mouse which has to be looking at a receiver over there to change my slides. And I've got a few feet of cord here. So with all of that logistical equipment and with your cooperation, we'll probably make a go of it. Let me introduce my topic. You know, the innovation strategy is a very big deal in Canada right now. The government announced it, Government of Canada, in February of this year. There have been about 7 months, 8 months of consultation across the country on this subject, the innovation strategy. And now, in fact, what's today? Today's the 13th. In 6 days, the final wrap-up and summit of the innovation strategy will take place with the Prime Minister present. And what will it do? Well, it might point the direction towards some new policies which will make us a little more innovative, maybe a lot more innovative than we've been, but that's not the goal, as you'll see here. But it seemed to me that if that was one of the main policy directions of the government, this group might find it interesting to juxtapose that with some of the ideas, some of the requirements of sustainable development, and see how they fit. And so the question, I've been told that if the green light isn't on, I have to press here for a few seconds and the green light will go on. There we go. Nothing still. There we go. Boy, you wait. Two ships passing in the night or two pieces of the same puzzle? That's the question that might be worth answering. Does the innovation strategy on the one hand have anything to do with the ideas behind or the requirements for sustainable development that we see in our future? Well, let's explore this a little bit. I'm going to start off by looking, actually I can see the screen, it's not bad, looking at the only science policy we have in this country right now. It was published in 1996, and it's called the Science and Technology Strategy. Okay, the Science and Technology Strategy sets three goals. And here they are: sustainable job creation and economic growth. Well, who can argue with that? Improved quality of life and the advancement of knowledge. Now, that was written down in 1996 after about a two-year consultation process. I have a feeling that maybe we could have done it over a long coffee with the crowd in this room. Well, you're going to have to help me hit some buttons there. There we go. And the strategy identifies four core activities of government: funding and performing scientific research to support the mandates of departments and agencies. The second one is the one that we're involved with here: supporting research in the universities and colleges and networks of centers of excellence. By the way, back in 1996, the networks of centers of excellence were an experimental program. It was only a year later that the program was made permanent. Then supporting private sector, R&D, and technology development, and providing information and analysis and building networks. So that was back in 1996. Let's have a look at 2002. So the speech from the throne in 2001 and the innovation strategy in 2002 put us on a new policy track. And I'm quoting the Prime Minister here. He said that the government will try to ensure that our research and development, measured as the effort per capita, spending per capita, is among the top five countries in the world. Well, you know, if you hear something like that, and you're a Canadian on the street, or like the Air Force crowd having a donut at Tim Hortons, you say, well, I can understand that, you know. We're in 15th place today. We want to go to 5th. In 15th place, you know you're out of the playoffs. The season's over. In 5th place, you can still make it. You can be a wild card. So I understand that. I'm in favor. I need your help on the buttons there. Okay. A lot of people in this room, the people interested in the management of research, think of R&D intensity as the gross expenditure on R&D divided by our GDP. But in fact, in this case, when you take it per capita, it's the research intensity times the standard of living. So what the Prime Minister was saying, what the government was saying, was we need to do more R&D per capita, we need to do more R&D relative to our economy, and we need to be more prosperous as a people. Nothing there to argue with. Well, but the question is, why? Why would you want to move to fifth place in R&D? What's the goal of that? Well, as far as I'm concerned, there's only one goal that matters to all of us, both as citizens and as taxpayers: the goal of having a better life for people in Canada, for all the people in Canada, a better life. And so what's the connection between that and doing more R&D? Well, the connection is quite strong, but you can't explain it with a microphone in front of you when you have 10 seconds for a soundbite on television. Because more R&D leads to all sorts of things. It leads to more innovation in all sectors of Canadian industry, and that's all sectors. More Canadian-made innovations that succeed in world markets. More value-added economic activity and wealth creation in Canada. leading to greater prosperity, which means more individual wealth and more collective wealth. Which means the capacity to make more investments that reflect our values. Make more investments in those things that we consider important. Healthcare, education, giving our kids a good start, protecting our environment, all of those things. And ultimately, to a better life for the people in Canada. Well, that's the goal of the innovation strategy. But I'd like you to think about that line which was at the bottom. If you can just go back one on that, yeah. Think of that line which says more Canadian innovations that succeed in world markets. Okay? Now, what are innovations? Innovations are products that are available from a very small number of sources. They're new products based on new knowledge. They have the characteristic that they create their own market, and you can set the price when you're selling innovations. The other thing you can be doing is be in the commodity markets where you have to take the price that the market sets for commodities. So if you're selling innovations, you can recover the costs of R&D and make enough profit with high enough margins to pay for the next generation. Okay, so now, with that, and if you buy that, I hope you buy that because I find it convincing, but don't think for a minute that there aren't innovations that require no R&D whatever. And you know all of them. You know the fashion industry, the entertainment industry, furniture design, the work of creative artists who put paint on the canvas and add value without any R&D. But in our modern age, our open, knowledge-driven, technologically based society, a lot of important innovations start with R&D. Okay, well, let's take a look at the big picture now of innovation. There's Canada in the center of the world. There's the world. Now, before I go any further, I've got to tell you that I once heard an after-dinner speaker from the States who really got me angry. He got me mad. He got me mad because he, in essence, made an insulting comment about this country, which is unfortunately too close to the truth. So I found it very motivating. This fellow said that Canada is a country that never misses an opportunity to miss an opportunity. Think about that. If that doesn't get you mad, nothing will. So anyway, here is the innovation picture. The world, and here in blue are two flows. So I'm introducing my color code, blue for knowledge flows, and I'm showing two. A 4% flow from Canada into the world and a 96% from the world into Canada. Now, what this stuff is codified new knowledge. This is knowledge that is written down, knowledge that can be put in a scientific paper, in a report, knowledge that can be used to create software. We produce, in science and engineering, slightly more than 4% of the world's publications, the world's new codified knowledge, and we're very productive because we do it for slightly less than 3% of the world investment. But the important thing about it isn't just that the ideas created in those 4% are available to us. If we are good in the 4% and we cover all the important areas of scientific activity in the world, that gives us the ability to understand the other 96%. So paying for the 4% buys us access to the 96. All right, what else do we have? Now, using the code of Brown and showing arrows of equal weight, I don't want to get into a debate about brain drain. I show the knowledge that highly qualified people possess, their tacit knowledge, what they understand, what they can do. This knowledge flows across the boundaries of the country. And then we have also something quite different. We have flows in mauve of capital and blue of knowledge, and these are the investments made, the foreign direct investments made in Canada by foreign multinationals and outside of Canada by Canadian multinationals, in which both knowledge and capital travel together. So, for example, if Toyota puts in a new assembly line, as they are, to produce the Lexus SUV in Cambridge, Ontario, they're putting in not only the financial investment, they're bringing in their technology, their management skills, their management system, their training system, and all of those items of knowledge which are needed to make the thing work. All right, let's keep moving. We make our money in the world by trading goods and services. And when you're in the commodity market, you take the price in the market. When you're in the innovation market, which I've marked as red, you set the price. Now, I'm sure you know that an innovation of today will be the commodity of sometime in the future, and sometimes it's very soon. I'll give you just two examples. One is take the world of high fashion. A dress which a model struts down a runway, which might have to cost $6,000 or $8,000 today, will be available in 6 months on the rack at Sears for $299.99. An innovation has become a commodity. A VCR, which was an innovation 20, 25 years ago, is today a commodity. That is, you can get the product with roughly the same quality, the same functionality, for a very low price, regardless of brand. You go to any hardware store today, and for $99.99, you can pick up a four-head hi-fi VCR. And the one that you get in one store will be just like the one you get with another name tag in another store. They've become commodities. So, it's quite a challenge to play in the market of selling innovations. You have to be nimble. You have to be on your feet. It's a bit like climbing up the down escalator. If you stop the effort for a while, you go down. You go backwards. So, this is the whole innovation ethos. And let me just say one more thing. My wife and I were hiking and camping in the Rockies this summer, and in one of the small towns in the area, and I can't remember whether it was Waterton Lakes or whether it was Lethbridge or wherever, we picked up a local newspaper, and there was a little matter-of-fact story. Somebody was quoted as saying that the softwood tariffs in the United States would have the effect, obviously, common sense, of driving investment and employment to the value-added segments of the industry, the places where window frames were made, sashes, railings, and so on, which were not controlled under the tariffs. And it struck me, you know, the search for value added, wouldn't it be great if the innovation strategy succeeded, and we did that as a matter of course, always, every day, and not just as a response to a crisis in a particular industry. That's the kind of thinking that might be much more prevalent in this country if the innovation strategy succeeds. So much about innovation. Now let's talk about sustainable development. The word triad appears in many places. I think there's a booth back there in which SFM advertises something under the name of triad. I haven't found out yet what it is. It may be this, for all I know. The triad, I will show us three intersecting rings of society, environment, and the economy and technology taken together. I don't distinguish in this between economy and technology. And, you know, when you look at that, you say, well, what does this represent? Could that represent the interests of people? It could represent spheres of physical activity. It could represent decisions and policies. And of course, within this, it's the intersection of the three that is the closest to being sustainable development. And I'll go into that in a little more detail. Let's just place in that where the various programs of the government are located. They're all pretty obvious. And you're right at the center. At the time when the application for funding of the SFM was being considered, the point was made that it was the first application seen in which explicitly were included research projects that address the interests of society, of the environment, and of the economy and technology. That's why I place you right at the center. There are a lot of other programs which intersect. For example, CIHR is the Canadian Institutes for Health Research. I've put them in that area of society for obvious reasons, but I also put them in the area, the intersection between society and environment. One of the four pillars of the Canadian Institutes for Health Research is to study the determinants of health, including the impact of the environment on the health of the society, a hugely important area. I don't think I'll take the time to talk about the others because I want to move on. Okay, so we now start with the triad, and I want to talk about sustainable development. There's much to consider. Now, there are people who will give you a number for the number of different definitions of sustainable development. What I'm going to show you in the next few minutes are the number of issues that arose out of 3 years' discussion of sustainable communities by an organization called the Ontario Premier's Council, which doesn't exist anymore, in which people from business, from labor, from non-governmental organizations, from community activist groups, native peoples, and others sat down together for 3 years to talk about what they could agree on was sustainable, was required for sustainable development. It was very difficult. These people had not had a history of talking to one another. There was not a high level of trust going in. But ultimately, after 3 years of work, they agreed on the things that I'm going to show you now. So, the whole notion of maintaining a civil society, a society with its organizations and behavior and adherence to laws. So promoting the development and maintenance of a civil society, avoiding social deficits was certainly part of this. Here was something else. Promoting individual and societal health. Everybody agreed that you couldn't really talk about the development of a sustainable community if the health of the people in that community, individual and societal, was awful in some way. Take the example of Russia at the moment. Their healthcare system, their structure of society has broken down to the extent that the life expectancy has been declining very significantly. So a Russian born today has the expectancy to live into the high 50s, much, much lower than it had been at one time. Here's another. Helping children develop into competent adults. That is, avoid developmental deficits among young people. Let's move on. Developing a skilled workforce of lifelong learners. That is, people who are not only skilled for today, but have the ability to continue being skilled for the needs of the future. Now let's move down to the economy. The obvious one, if sustainability means avoiding deficits, fiscal deficits are part of that. Don't leave our children burdened with debt. Another one is make long-term investments to build the foundations of future prosperity. Don't eat your seed corn today. Plant some for tomorrow. Create individual and collective wealth. You've seen that one before. And now in the intersection between the two, having developed a skilled workforce of lifelong learners provides satisfying and rewarding work opportunities. You notice the word work opportunities, not employment opportunities, because for a lot of people, personal entrepreneurship will meet those needs. So it's more than just being somebody else's employee. It's being somebody else's employee if that's what you want to do, but it's creating your own business if that's what you want to do. Then, minimizing new negative environmental impacts. That comes pretty easy. And also restoring or remediating historical damage. Very, very important. And now, you know, this comes pretty easy. This kind of thinking, people do these things and they think about them. This just shows how they fit together. But if you actually then begin to think about the new ideas that you might have when you're talking and thinking sustainable that you might not have thought and talked before, there are some new things that appear on the scene. Here's one. Integrate new green technologies into the economy. Here's another. Promote prosperity, but uncouple economic growth from the growing consumption of non-renewable resources. Okay? We could have a lot of discussion about how you do that. The word value, adding value, is very much part of that. Promote economic growth associated with harvesting renewable resources as the basis of value-added products. And finally, I couldn't resist this because I used to teach thermodynamics. Maximize reversibility and minimize irreversibility. You know, the mechanical engineer who knows about thermodynamics says, well, this whole thing is about not generating any more entropy than you have to. Next slide, you know, that kind of approach. Okay, so this is one view, one group's view. That last slide was one group's view of some of the elements that went into providing sustainable development. Now I'm going to take the triad again, and I'm going to write on it the goals from the government's innovation strategy, and we'll see how they fit. So there's the first one. To give our children and youth the best possible start in life. Well, that sounds like something we saw in the other one. All qualified Canadians have access to high-quality post-secondary education. By the way, I'm quoting verbatim. These are verbatim from the documents of the innovation strategy. Address potential public and business confidence challenges before they develop. This has to do with creating the capacity in this country for the assessment of new science and new technologies. Credible science assessment made not under contract to a sponsor, but made independently and reported to the public. I'm going to master this by the time this speech is over. There we go. To ensure Canada's current and emerging workforce is more highly skilled and adaptable. Adaptable here, lifelong learners on the other slide. To ensure that Canada continues to attract the highly skilled immigrants it needs and helps them to achieve the full potential that they can in Canadian society and in the labor market. Again, taken directly from the document Knowledge Matters. Well, you better hit it for me because I'm not getting it with this. Okay. Improve incentives to innovation. Ensure that a growing number of firms benefit from the commercial application of knowledge. Another way of putting it is that if invented in Canada, let's try to have it made in Canada to give Canadians good jobs, to have the profits stay in this country. Better yet, you know, let's be able to make investment decisions of those profits in this country as well. Vastly increase public and private investments in knowledge and knowledge infrastructure to improve Canada's R&D performance. This says essentially invest more in university research and in government research. And ensure that Canada's stewardship regimes and marketplace framework policies are world class. That's not quite as obvious in terms of their environmental impact as you might expect it to be, but the words that follow in the paragraphs after that stated goal do take us there. So, coming back to my title slide, is the innovation strategy and the needs, the requirements for sustainable development, are they two ships passing in the night, or are they simply two pieces of the same puzzle? The proposed innovation strategy makes no reference to sustainable development. None whatever. You won't find the words in there. But as I think I've just shown, there is much in it that is needed to achieve sustainable development. Not nearly enough, but many of the elements that are necessary are there. So maybe Canada can have both prosperity and sustainable development if we develop the vision and find the will to connect the two goals. In that case, it helps to think of the innovation strategy and sustainable development as two pieces of the same puzzle. And the image in my mind is a jigsaw puzzle in a box. But, give me the last line, we still need that picture on the box. We still need that vision which would embrace both sustainable development and the innovation strategy, prosperity, clean environment, a society without deficits, all of those things which I think many of us would long to see in the future, if not ourselves and of our children. As you've noticed, I presented this entirely in English, mais je dois ajouter que les deux documents clés sont aussi disponibles en français. Thank you very much for your attention. I hope that you found this approach interesting, and I congratulate you again on your efforts that are displayed in the research at the back and during the lectures. Thank you again.